The summer of 81. What a vintage season. What deeds of daring do. Such excitement, such tensions, such dramas. It will live forever in the memories of all lovers of our blessed summer game. In Witness Scrotum, too, we had our moments. The White Admirals returned to my garden for the first time in 15 years. And for 7 solid weeks, the Lady Wife's confounded Bedlington Terriers were laid low with a bout of canine piles. But these, of course, are the musings of a village Hampden. Enough of non-entities. Let us concentrate on that one man who strolled through the season like a colossus, who thrilled us, who inspired us, who made strong men weep tears of joy, who sent surges of long-lost patriotic fervor coursing through the veins of every man, woman, and child in this dear country of ours, and who excited the immortal Mr. E.R. Elizabeth Regina Dexter to dizzy heights of sublime prose which even he in his eminence could scarcely have hoped to attain. I quote, "He played a real snorter of an innings." Such command of language. Such beauty of style. And to whom was he referring? Of course, dear listeners, of course, he was referring to that most celebrated son of Botham City, Batman. There now, the secret is out. Botham City, the hometown of our hero of the summer of 81, is more widely known to you and me, dear listeners, as Keating Newtown. Keating Newtown. What a sad, dismal testimony to all that is base and vile in contemporary society. It was built with such high hopes. Yes, it was a noble ideal to provide a new town in the heart of the English countryside for the poor wretches from the slums of our loathsome industrial cities. But, dear God, was it necessary to build the bloody thing a mere spit and a Honda ride away from Witness Scrotum? No, dear listeners, no. I shall contain myself. I shall concentrate my attentions on the hero of the hour, Batman of Botham City. Let me conduct you to his place of abode. Come with me to Keating Newtown, and let us search out our hero in situ. We stand for a moment in the main square of the town, the grand place Hetherington, situated on the site of the ancient Groniad Abbey. What folly to have expected the subhuman louts from the loathsome industrial cities, with their luminous socks and their cheap wristwatches, to respond to the cultural offerings of the Harris-tweeded, limp-bow-tied weirdos and Nancy boys from the Arts Council and the St. John Stevens Academy of Woodcraft and Rock Climbing. Just look. The Dame Sybil Thornber Memorial Theatre is an empty shell. The De Jong Theatre of the Absurd is a rotting hulk, cruelly defaced by graffiti, most of it in the handwriting of Brian Chugg, L.P. Samuel, and Enid J. Wilson. And saddest of all, the building which housed the Jill Tweedy Feminist Consort Fully Committed Circus is now used as a mail-order warehouse for the sale of novelty condoms, Polly Toynbee naughty flannelette nighties, and erotic cricket pads. Let us hurry away, for now we are within reach of our hero. Turn the corner into Lacey Close, cut through the Snicket into Rodder Drive, and there in front of us is his place of residence. Here is the shrine to which cricket lovers from all over the country will soon come to worship if I reveal its identity. Shall I? Shall I? Shall I? Yes. Yes, I owe it to you, dear listeners. The abode of Batman of Botham City, the hero of the summer of 81, is a corner shop. And above the window, written in letters of lime green and modest size, is the legend, Neville Gribbley, Wavy Line Grocer. I hear the gasps of horror. Batman, a grocer? The man who single-handedly won 2 test matches for England against Australia, a purveyor of baked beans, Meltonian shoe polish, and special offer toilet rolls. Yes, tis so, dear listeners. Tis so. Press your nose against the window of the shop and look inside. Yes, there he is. The baggy chalk-striped flannels and the grease-scuffed hush puppies reaching up for a packet of sultanas is indeed Batman. Now do you understand? It is only in moments of greatest national emergency that he rips off his AirTech singlet, his clip-on St. Michael bow tie and surgical sandals, and dons the uniform of Batman. The pristine white sweater under which bulges the noble barrel chest, the pristine white flannels under which ripple those whipcord muscles, the navy blue war helmet, and the false beard from the Alec and Eric Teehee joke shop. At all other times, Batman is simply Neville Gribble, 5'3" in his stocking feet, 7.5 stone, excluding the 3 ballpoint pens and 7 propelling pencils he carries constantly on his person, and a man of profound meekness, sensitivity, and modesty. The real Batman, the real hero of the summer of 81, is a simple soul frightened of mice and cockatiels, totally opposed to strong drink and bold women, a devotee of Crossroads and the works of O.S. Nock, a man whose principal pleasure is indoor embroidery and the restoration of vintage bicycle pumps. Let us enter the shop. The bell jingles merrily. We listen to a soft and diffident voice as he speaks to his customers.
Yes, Mrs. Gower, we do have a special offer in hair nets this week. Morning, Mr. Gatting. No, we don't stock those. I'd try the barber if I was you.
Let us creep past him and enter his private quarters. How neat. How tidy. How fastidious. In his diner kitchenette, everything is spotless. The Tupperware gleams, the tea towels are starched, snowy white, the muslin covers on the marmalade jars are immaculate, and there is not a single stain on his tin of Bournvita. And upstairs, in his dear little bedroom, with its clair-à-cluck frieze, his night attire is neatly folded in his Mike Brearley autograph pyjama case. There is not a speck of wax in his nightlight holder, and his Hobbs and Sutcliffe tea maker stands proudly on his cane bedside table next to the silver-framed photo of Mr. Ian Chappell. Let us descend the stairs and talk to our hero, for it is his evening break, and he's only too happy to share with us his pot of Maserati tea and his plate of custard creams. Let us allow him to speak for himself, shall we?
Yes,
he says, as with crooked little finger he delicately dunks a biscuit in his willow-pattern teacup.
Yes, I have got ambitions. My fondest ambition, i.e. what I'd like to do most in this world, is to own a knitting-wool shop in Basingstoke.
Is he happy with his lot?
Oh, yes, yes, indeed. You see, there's a lot to recommend this life. I think I'm providing what I call a service to the community, which is not provided by the supermarkets with their impersonal service and their relative inaccessibility. And I do think I compare with them most favourably as regards prices, particularly on my bacon counter, where I do a very good line in knuckles.
And what about his social life?
Well, basically, I'm a rather shy and reticent person, once out of the environs of the shop. I used to like going to the cinema until they started showing rude films. And I used to go every Friday to the public bath until they converted it to mixed bathing. Basically, though, I'm what I like to call a home-loving person. I like watching Crossroads on the telly. Isn't it scandalous what they did to Meg Richardson? And I have to confess, I'm rather fond of Blankety Blank, particularly when they have Kenny Everett on. Isn't he a yell? I like Give Us a Clue, too, although I do wish Michael Aspel would tell us sooner when they're going to put the clue up on the screen. In the main, however, I prefer what I like to call the wireless. I like Ken Ford on Gardner's Question. Hasn't he got a deep, manly voice? And I'm a great fan of Louise Botting on the Money Programme. Also, I like Yesterday in Parliament, The Legal Beagle on the Jimmy Young Show, and any programme that deals with our feathered friends.
And what about romance? Is there a little lady in his life?
Oh, no. No, you see, basically, I'm very shy as regards what I like to call the opposite you-know-what. As I never drink anything stronger than Vimto, I never go to public houses, and, well, that's where you meet young ladies these days, isn't it? Mind you, I do dream about them sometimes. I have this dream, which I have quite often, actually. There's these young ladies, and they're wearing nothing but cricket caps, and they're heaving and straining, pulling the heavy roller at Taunton, and they're being whipped by Vivian Richards, who's wearing nothing but a Google Armain jockstra, and they've painted his nipples carmine, and his buttocks...
At this moment, there's a strident buzz on the telephone. It glows and it pulsates. Our hero leaps up from his uncut moquette, wearing and gillow granny rocker, and wrenches up the receiver. Yes, 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 he says tersely. He slams down the receiver. In an instant, he is transformed into Batman. The chest bulges, the muscles ripple. He raises his bat to his shoulder, he adjusts his abdominal protector, and in a screech of tires and a deep-bellied snarl of jet engine, he disappears from our view in his blood-red Bothamobile. Yes, Batman is off again to do battle for queen and country. Whither is he bound? To knock the stuffing out of Indian spin bowlers? To thresh the living daylights out of Mr. H.D. Dickie Bird? To liberate Afghanistan from its Russian overlords and free Tibet from the yoke of Chinese oppression? Maybe. It is, however, my personal hope that he is off to Westminster to give a severe ear cuffing to that slimy little toad, Mr. Leo Britton. However, all in good time, we shall know the purpose of his mission. Let us leave now. One moment. The lady wife sent me on an errand for a packet of marzipan paste. And there it is, on the shelf, next to the tins of pilchards and the packets of bicarb. No, dear listeners, I have not forgotten. I have left the money on the counter. Dear God, we don't want a visit from Batman in witness scrotum, do we?
Robin Bailey there as the acerbic brigadier in More Tales from a Long Room, a bridge for radio by the writer Peter Tinniswood and produced by Tony Cliff. Next week, the brigadier threatens to reveal the identity of the KGB mole placed in the very vitals of English cricket.